Hello, everyone. Welcome to a delayed episode of Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am joined by my colleague, my spirit animal, Kurt Hogue, Brewers reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We have, well, it's the eve of the baseball season. We are one day away from the Milwaukee Brewers opening in Yankee Stadium in the Bronx. Devin Williams versus Nestor Cortez. Not exactly, but something like that. We're here to talk all about it because the Brewers are done with spring training. They have broken camp. You don't really know, I don't think, what the roster is completely looking like, but we're gonna talk about that. Kurt, how are you? How is your bracket? Have you been enjoying March Madness? I know that you are partial to the Wisconsin Badgers, and unfortunately, that did not go well. How are you feeling though about the tournament thus far?
Yeah, that's what are you asking me? Am I enjoying? Do you think I enjoyed sitting there as the Badgers played terrible all game and then got my hopes back into it and then just died a quick and sudden and painful death when they lost? Actually, no, you know, this is an opportunity to talk about growth. So I'm not only do I apologize in terms of growth for saying that was a bad question, because actually it was okay.
No, it was a bad question. I'm feeding off of your sadness, to be completely clear, but go on.
Okay. Like 15 minutes after the Badgers lost, I was talking to my buddy and I was like, that was just a great game. I'm like, wait a second. What's happened to me? Have I lost my gumption? Am I washed? Is that really what I've become? And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, I think so. I was working a lot this weekend too, but I watched a lot of basketball. Like after the Badger game was over, I was like, okay, what's the next game on? Normally, it's like we're done for the weekend. Maybe the next weekend,
the tournament. Yeah,
especially a loss like that. I mean, I guess it wasn't like super duper duper crushing, because you knew this team probably wasn't going to go to like the Elite Eight. It was a fun year, and they were down by 10-12 all game, and so you kind of had come to grips with it. They were down 8 with 1:15 to play, so it was okay. Yeah. I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. I'm excited to watch a lot of baseball Thursday. Oh, we get all baseball all day Thursday, and then we get the Sweet 16 games. Oh, I could cry.
Yeah, I'm really happy for you. I hated every second of it because I didn't get to watch it. I was looking at it on my phone because I was physically at another NCAA tournament game. I was in Kentucky, went to the game, took my son to the Lexington games. No, it wasn't good because I didn't see a good basketball game.
No, the game was bad.
I didn't see a good basketball game. I just saw the Badgers giving up bucket after bucket after bucket, including one at the very end of the first half. I haven't even seen the highlights.
Okay, that play is going to burn me for a while. I've moved past the rest, but the Badgers had the ball with about 20 seconds left in the half. They go semi-transition instead of pulling the ball out, doing Wisconsin of old. Here we were thinking all season long that the Badgers pushing the ball a little bit was good. It's fun. Mm-hmm. It's good basketball. You get more recruits this way.
You only lose 91 to 89 in this instance.
They throw the ball into Crowell. He takes a shot with like 15 seconds left instead of holding it. He misses. BYU gets the ball down the other end, hits a three at the buzzer. It was bad, JR. Can we please, for the love of God, talk about baseball?
I gave up on that game so many times, and by giving up on it, I mean I put my phone in my pocket for a second and then took my phone out again and was shocked that they were in it. I was watching Auburn. Who were they playing? I don't even know. Creighton. It was Creighton. It was wonderful.
Oh, Creighton, yeah.
NCAA tournament, not a good time to go to as a neutral fan. I have not done that before, and it was boring. I mean, it was fine. It was cool. It was neat to be there. I'm really glad I got to take my son, but like that event's weird. And
you
got to
catch a really good game.
You
like
do.
In 2016, I think I was in St. Louis covering for Wisconsin and as a student, and the game right before
was the Xavier game
I did see the Xavier game. Yes. But the one I wasn't even going to talk about that was the Michigan Middle Tennessee State game.
Yes.
That game was awesome. Yes. So that was super fun to be there for that. And then obviously the Xavier game was off the charts bonkers too, but you kind of got to see like a Michigan Middle Tennessee State game. Otherwise, it's just better to watch on TV. It's like the NFL.
Yeah. I believe that's the same night Paul Jesperson of Merrill, Wisconsin hit a half court buzzer beater to beat Shaka Smarts.
Yes, that was the Xavier game. Yeah, the Xavier game.
No, I think that happened on the same night is what I'm saying.
Yeah, Sunday night. Yes, they had. That was the first night, wasn't it? That was the first night.
I don't know. Jesperson. You know what?
Yes, right. Yes. the first that the same night as the Wisconsin Pitt game, which is the same night as the Michigan State Middle Tennessee game, was the Jesperson buzzer beater. And then two nights later was, I don't know if you know, if you remember this, the crazy Texas A&M comeback against UNI. Oh,
against Northern Iowa. Yeah, they blew it.
Yeah, they were down like 12 in the final minute and they won.
Insane, insane. The Badgers almost pulled off something similar, I would say. In 2015, the Badgers went to the national championship game. You may, have, you may remember that. You may
We doing this? Why?
Later that day, because you just mentioned, I should say actually earlier that day, you just mentioned the baseball NCAA doubleheader. The Brewers opened the season that very day, the day that the Badgers lost to Duke, and they lost 10 to nothing. Do you remember, Kurt, because this is the first trivia question of the evening, do you remember who the Brewers lost to that day 10 to nothing?
Yeah, they lost to the Rockies. Duh.
They did. Yeah, they did. Do you remember who pitched for the Rockies? A guy who you will know from the Phillies. He was like in his last or last year, full year. Look at you from the, this is for YouTube only. We can see you dressed up as a giraffe at the NCAA championship game in Indianapolis. You with your bros.
With my friend times. Here. My friend here was the sad Teletubby from the internet. Sad Teletubby.
You may recall those who remember viral things from 10 years ago. Do you remember who pitched?
Last moment of happiness. Who pitched that game for the Brewers?
So no, for the Rockies, because he is most known for his work with the Phillies. He shuts out the Brewers, and he ends up like at the end of the year, he leads the league in earned runs allowed. It was his last season. Not a great pitcher. Somehow is pitching on opening day and shuts
Joe
down
Blanton?
The Brewers. Oh, that's
Joe
a really
Blanton?
Good guess. Really good guess. No, and I'm not going to give you more guesses because it'll take forever. Kyle Kendrick.
I don't know.
Kyle Kendrick,
right.
Interesting,
oh,
right?
Oh, goodness. Yeah, no, I have zero recollection of that.
Because there were bigger fish to fry, presumably. The Milwaukee Brewers will be in Yankee Stadium trying to fry some fish. Actually, that would be if they were playing the Marlins. But they will be getting going here on Thursday. Kurt, who is on this roster? Because we some things have happened since we last chatted. Things that we did not see coming. I personally did not see coming. Caleb Durbin not being on this opening day roster is 100%
yeah, totally.
Something I did not see coming. The Brewers have traded Mark Canha. He is now a Royal. Manny Margot is gone. That's not a surprise, but he's
saw that coming.
Guardian? Is he a Guardian now? He's somewhere in the AL.
Tiger.
That's right. Tiger. There is a vacancy. There's a vacancy on this roster when it comes to position players. Vinny Capra making the team. Not a surprise. Oliver Dunn, Vinny Capra, third base platoon. Is that what we're left with? I am confused.
Yes.
I feel like that's it.
Well, what's the alternative? Yeah, that's the end of the story. That's why it's a bit surprising. I mean, that's actually not why it's a bit surprising Durbin wasn't on the team. Why it's surprising is Pat Murphy is obsessed with the kid. He loves the kid. It's like his favorite player. So when we asked him about just the move when they sent him down on Saturday, Pat Murphy said, I actually believe in the kid more now than I did at the start of spring training, but they're sending him down. So ultimately, like, his defense wasn't good this spring, and they need him to play third base with the way they're going to go with this alignment. And Vinny Capra had a good spring and can play third base a little bit. So I guess that tracks. I thought Caleb Durbin would still be on just because, especially after they traded Canha, you kind of are looking for someone to be that DH against left-handed pitching. So I still have some unanswered questions. I'm obviously not still in Arizona to ask them, but it feels like we know what the position player roster is, although shocking. You've heard this before. The Brewers are taking till the last second to make a decision. I know.
Well, who are the candidates?
I know.
Because, okay, let's
look
at this again.
It's Jake Bowers. Well, also
even
Isaac,
with Bowers, you're missing a... Oh, Isaac Collins.
Isaac Collins. But there's also some limbo of just the current market. So, like, the impression I am under is that Isaac Collins is, as the guy with options, is sort of the guy here who is like, okay, you're coming to New York, but
we
if
might
someone
find
comes
else.
Available, right, that's the guy. And then they've been working through Jake Bauer's contract and his upward mobility clause and all that sort of fun thing, which also is confusing to me. And I was trying to like figure this out. There's like, you could just add him. You have 13 position players healthy in camp, 13 pitchers too, but the plot thickens there. We'll get to that in a second. Just put him on the team. I don't understand.
Yeah.
So the fact that when I left camp and then when Monday happened and the other reporters left camp and we still had things unclear, That is why the gears are turning in my head, and especially on the pitcher side. But like, if they had 13 guys and they knew those were the 13 guys, they would just tell the 13 guys. But yeah, they didn't do that. Capra found out on Sunday, and like, we knew for days before that it was going to be him. So that was another, that's another thing too. It's like, they were just taking till the end with guys they knew were going to be on the team. So that's the position player side of it. I was surprised by some of the moves. I thought Canna would be the bat against left-handed pitching as the DH, but he kind of doesn't look good.
Yeah, it wasn't a promising spring for him, and the Royals had a starting job for him, so that's fine. Like, Mark, there's a lot of Mark Cannas out there, so I don't think that's necessarily, other than he's a great dude and has some history here, so I don't know if there's really any huge loss there. It's just that they, you know, it made sense that they brought him in, because I don't know if I thought Isaac Collins was going to get anywhere near this roster. I mean, he's a
no,
guy that's easy to root for, but especially because Collins, Capra, even Oliver Dunn to some extent, like, you can kind of throw them all in the same bucket of like,
put some respect on Oliver Dunn's name. Thank you.
That is fair. Oliver Dunn is in a separate category. Vinny Capra and Isaac Collins are the same, right? Like, one could play more outfield. Like, well,
I would say, yeah, I was going to say, well, Isaac Collins is a prospect, but I mean, really, he's like 27 and Capra's 28. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get caught up in spring stats here, but I kind of am intrigued by what Vinny Capra can do, because I think his defense is solid and he can play multiple spots. And sometimes guys come to camp and they made a real changes, and his bat speed, not only his bat speed, but the swing is also coming with a more simplified swing and approach. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's possible there's something there. I mean, more likely than not, right? History tells us what's going to happen here. Mike Brasso, when he led the Cactus League in dingers, your guy, Angel Echevarria, or Angel Echevarria.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
But Brad Nelson, like, more often than not, that's the way this goes. But there's Jesus Aguilar every once in a while. So maybe he ends up being a solid platoon player. Did you like that?
I did. Yeah.
You didn't even notice it.
No, I'm sorry. It's late and things are flying over my head already. It's not great. We went to the Admirals game tonight.
We
saw some Admirals action. Love a good hockey game, but it is late.
Yeah. The Admirals game's great time. Objectively good time. Would love an NHL team here, but Admirals for family fun.
So good. Probably, the accessibility.
Probably better for the value too. Yeah.
Off the charts. John Greenberg, an all-time great person. So that's cool too. I tried to explain the more cowbell meme to my daughter, my 10-year-old daughter, because they play the clip a couple times and there's a lot of cowbell at hockey games. And, you know, I started with like Blue Oyster Cult and tried to explain Christopher Walken and SNL. Like, she knows what SNL is, but like, let me tell you, I realized very early on that I was in way too deep and this was not going to come through. And like, after it was all that, she's just like, that sounds really stupid. And I'm like, that's the point. I think it was a tough night for your guy.
She'll get there eventually.
She has so many questions.
If she's your child, she'll get there eventually.
Yeah. So many questions. Like, she's asking about icing and not like I thought it was the rule icing. And then I thought it was like something that has to do with when you stop skating and the ice flies up, the ice shavings. And then I thought it was the Zamboni. I don't even remember what it actually was. It was maybe one of those things. So, what are we talking about? Position players?
The pitching, the roster. Yeah.
So, time we did this, I was pretty sure I had a good handle on who was going to be pitching, but that included Nick Mears, who is going to open the season on the injured list after he had got sick and had trouble sort of building up. Still needs a little more work before that happens. Also, Tobias Myers got hurt. So Tyler Alexander, Elvin Rodriguez, Elvis Peguero are all kind of shoe-ins. And I think it looks like Abner Uribe, who's going to start the year with a 4-game suspension, will take up the last spot. I think that's sensible. That makes a lot of sense. What a better time to clear this than the time when you've got a random off day after the first game of the season and you've got everybody healthy. Like, that makes some sense. But tell me what you're thinking about this pitching staff, because there's still a little bit of mystery.
Again, it's the Brian Windhorst meme.
Why would they do that?
Well, and part of it too is you're not going to want to roster Abner Uribe for 4 games when he can't pitch, and Jose Quintana when he is not physically there, like, he literally cannot pitch. I think they're gonna try to find a work around here.
I
have mostly taken the day off. This was kind of on my list to do for the day, so shame on me. But hey, I just worked for like 20 straight days and wanted a day off. So I wanted to see where guys like Blake Snell and those other pitchers who started the season late, if they were on the injured list to start the year, or what the league allows on that. Either way, Quintana has an option. Maybe they could work that through with him. I don't think Quintana's on the opening day roster.
Interesting. Quintana can't possibly have an option still. Like,
He does.
But after X number of years, can't you veto this stuff? I don't even know.
You could work this through with, like, he doesn't need the op. Like, you can work this through with the player and his agent in a certain circumstance of.
Sure. Hey.
And then, so there's that option, but there's also the injured list. And again, I didn't. So I'm speculating a bit. If anyone knows like where those guys started, let us know. I'll probably look it up tomorrow. It's too late now. You could backdate that 3 days. And then if you count those days out, 15 days would land you at the start of the Colorado series.
Yeah.
In like the second week of April. And that's right before Nestor Cortez is scheduled to have his first child as well. I think that due date is like the 12th or something. It's fluid around that time. We don't know what it's going to be. Sure. So it just adds more complication to the roster situation, but like, they're not going to roster Abner Uribe for 4 games in New York and Jose Quintana for X amount of games when neither of them can pitch.
That's a good
You're going to be down big. And think about it. Tyler Alexander would have to start on Monday, probably, presumably. And then one of the other guys would have to start Tuesday against the Royals. And even though you do have an off day Friday, you're still running into like, that's going to be short starts. Your bullpen is going to be completely taxed and you don't have your rebay. So here's where Brian comes in the picture. Yeah,
you will have your rebay after Monday.
Yeah, but not for Monday. This is where Brian Windhorst comes into the picture. I think they're going to call someone else up. That was not in big league camp. That's just my gut. I don't have any tell on that. I could not find any tell on that. It's hush hush.
Why would it have to be somebody who was not in big league camp? Why couldn't it be Logan Henderson?
Because was not in big league camp, was optioned out of big league camp.
Oh, I see.
It's just unusual. Normally, once you're out of big league camp, that means you didn't make the team. I think like Chad Patrick. That's my guess. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Could Connor Thomas start a game? I mean, he could, of course, but then you're still losing out of your bullpen.
Connor Thomas is also an option there, and you could go to your bullpen for like Grant Anderson or someone who was not in big league camp at the end of camp, but is on the 40-man. It all depends on what you prefer there. Feels like Chad Patrick would make some sense. The other alternative, and Pat Murphy didn't seem to love this idea. I thought it was like spot on what they were going to do. So maybe it is, but you could just start with more relievers and then option Elvin or option Elvis somewhat, and then call up Patrick to make that start. So I think there's going to be some movement early in the season for sure. I know the injuries have played a role in this, but as the camp whittled down, and maybe this was on me, but I was generally not super enthralled by the roster conversation because the depth on the team is not as intriguing as it was in recent years, like on those spots. Yeah. Does that make sense?
It does. Like
20 through 26 is not. It's hard, not the strong suit of any team, but like the Brewers 18 through 26 on the roster is generally pretty okay. Maybe the couple spots at the end, but this this seems top heavier than I feel like we've had in years past here.
Yeah, I mean, some of that just comes down to where your prospects are at. You know, Jacob Mizorowski is not ready for the big leagues, and he's not going to be for a while. So you can't go to that well.
Not as a starter, that's for sure.
No, not as a starter. And if they're not going to punt on that at this point in the season, of course. Jefferson Caro is not somebody who you're going to call up right away because he's coming off of an entirely missed season by injury. You've got Cooper Pratt, who's I think still most of the year away, if not the entire year. I mean, I think it's the entire year away. There's a chance he gets here by the end of the season, but you know, there's still a lot of seasoning there. AAA is not loaded. It's loaded with guys who will play for this team, but it's not loaded with guys who could come up and conceivably be a starting player for 2 weeks, you know, unless you're talking about a relief pitcher. You know, we know Craig Yoho is there, but they're not going to want to add him to the 40 man.
Craig Yoho should be on this team.
100%. Yes.
Point blank.
I think, Kurt, we have crossed a threshold. I think if this were last year, oddly enough, they would be more likely to add him last year than this year, because I think at some point you realize what you have with Craig Yoho, that he isn't just a reliever, that he's potentially a special reliever. And now we've crossed the threshold from that's a guy we might add to the 40 man because he's useful and we could bring him up, to we need to wait a little bit because he's real, real good. And we don't want to start that clock turning until we absolutely have to.
I also think you can manage the workload a little better for a little bit at AAA.
That's true.
But
that's true.
That also goes against the Brewers win tonight mantra. So if you're frustrated that Craig Yoho is not on the team, you are heard. We are your therapists.
Well, also, you know, if they call him up soon, he'd still be eligible for that prospect benefit thing. Like if he's rookie of the year, I don't think he's going to be rookie of the year or anything like
he's
that.
But he's not ranked. He's not ranked.
Oh, you're right.
I believe you have to be top, which is right. Kind of a silly part of it. Like it should just
be some degree.
I don't know. Like if you have a rookie not ranked and he goes crazy, then
okay. So we're talking about a guy that does not benefit them if they are playing the system the way the teams play the system. It does not benefit them to have him in the majors until he is absolutely surefire ready, because they don't want.
Well, like a reliever is not going to win that award over a full season. Look at Cade Smith last year for the Guardians. What place did he finish?
No, that's a good point. Devin won in 2020.
Yeah, that was different circumstances for sure. Of course, the American League rookies were kind of mid last year. Like it was an uninspiring group, relatively speaking. And Cade Smith did not win with an insane season. So
no, you're right.
I don't think that would really matter anyway, but they do get the extra year. And that probably wink, wink matters.
Has a benefit. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know anything.
It's a weird possible situation where he got too good to the point that he was more than just a useful player that they would add to the 40 man because they needed a body, to the point where like, oh, we need to hold off because he's like the real, real deal. Did get roughed up in his last outing in spring though. So you at least have a little bit of plausible deniability in the small sample theater to send him down. We know he's not going to be on the roster, but what do you think he has to do, if anything, to get up to this team within the first couple months of the season? I should say, we know what he has to do. He has to like become a quality defensive player somewhere on this diamond. And quite honestly, probably work out some things with the hitting too. But is that a possibility for him? Like, could he go down to AAA, start out strong and become an option for this team? You know, ultimately probably the guy that they would want instead of Jake Bowers, the fully functioning Tyler Black is a guy that I'm sure they envisioned would be on this team by 2025. Is that still on the table for him, do you think?
I think so. Yeah. It's the equation has, at least in Pat, the way Pat Murphy describes it, is the equation is so much on offense for him now that they just need him to be a really competent offensive player. So the bar is raised, and look, he had a good year at AAA last year, but the development can't stop there. And this spring wasn't what the Brewers or Tyler Black wanted at first base. So you kind of just want to throw that out the window a little bit and see what he can do at AAA, because, you know, it's going to take a while. It's not going to be a quick call up if there's success, just because of his big league small track record last year wasn't good. And I guess I said you want to throw a spring out the window, but like what you saw was not particularly impressive for what you want out of one of your top prospects. So, like, the train has not left the station on Tyler Black. That's for sure. We can't say it has. But with the way the Brewers have gone about the first base situation, signing Jake Bowers in the offseason, re-signing Jake Bowers in the offseason, going out and getting Mark Canna, like that stuff sort of says a lot. And they were clearly trying to get it to work for Black this spring. Like, he was playing through the end of all these games when everyone else was out of the game, just trying to make something click for him. And what Pat Murphy said at the end of spring was he needs the game to slow down for him on offense. And maybe that's a good way to put it. He never looked fully comfortable.
Yeah. You wrote toward the end here, and you can read this at jsonline.com, about two people who very much interest me this year, Jackson Chirio and Christian Yelich. Yelich says they both look great. Needless to say, we talked about Jackson Chirio quite a bit. Yelich as well looks, you know, obviously coming off this back surgery, was something to watch. He appears to be at full strength. He kind of wrote about how he implemented that last step of really like stealing a base and looking more fluid on the base paths. What, having seen them in spring training, what do you expect from these guys this year? What ultimately, you know, how easily can you dismiss what Chirio did, where he batted almost 500 in spring training this year? Does it look like Yelich is I was going to say, is Yelich back? That's something we don't say on Brewers Twitter. There are multiple levels. What are your expectations for these two guys this year?
Yeah, I rode Christian Yelich last year. After their series in LA, I was like, dude, this guy looks really good again. And then his back flared up.
Yeah.
Like right then, a couple days later. So that one's on me, folks. Jer, I expect them to be really good baseball players. And that's why people tune into this here podcast.
Yes. Beautiful analysis.
Just for insight like that. The way, I don't care that Jackson Chirio almost hit 500 in spring. Actually, that's a lie. It was kind of awesome to see him do it. But it was like, and I wrote about this too, it was the way he was, it looked so easy. Like he wasn't even trying. In his last, yeah. I guess not his last spring, the last game that I saw in spring, he turned on 97 mile an hour fastball from Rockies top prospect, Chase Dolander, who's not a big leaguer yet, but like this dude's good. He's going to be really good, albeit in Colorado. So caveats. Turned on it and crushed it 425, 430 to dead center. And that's what he did all spring. Everything was hit on the line. Everything was hit hard. And he just didn't seem to like have any struggles whatsoever. It was just easy. And again, yeah, no, it doesn't matter because guys are just working on things. He probably got a lot of pitches to hit. But this is actually sort of what we talked about with Jonathan Judge way back. You got to credit the guys if they're hitting mistakes. Sure, Aaron Judge hits all his home runs on pitches over the middle. But you know what? In the big leagues, guys are going to make mistakes. They're going to throw pitches down the middle. And if Chirio's going to hammer that every single time, then guess what? He's going to hit 30 homers.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's everyone always says it's scary to think about this guy. I think about Giannis. It's scary if he comes up with a jump shot, but like Jackson Chirio taking that leap makes him a 5-win player in the big leagues. And I don't think we're talking about that enough in the Brewers' possible outcomes. It's like, oh, Jackson Chirio is a top 10 player in the National League. It's very possible. Very, very possible. And then with Christian Yelich, age doesn't seem to have hit him yet. All the skills that we know of are still there. The speed might be down a little tick, but nevertheless, it's about health, and he seems healthy now. We can read a fair amount into that, but not too much, because we'll see what happens when the regular season gets going. You can manage things a lot better in spring training, your workload. But he's optimistic, so no reason for the people not to be optimistic.
Another guy we've talked about, Joey Ortiz. Eno Saris of The Athletic had kind of some like basic predictions for the season. Mentioned Joey Ortiz as a 2020 player. Pointed out that things were really going well for him last year. We know this early in the season. Then he got that neck ailment. Pointed out that things got really bad from there, that neck ailment might have been a bigger deal than we know about. He crushed it this spring. He gave us a moment of levity when he ran off the field, presumably for a bathroom break.
Presumably about it.
Nope. You know, I threw a presumably in there because I just didn't feel like hanging that on him, but that's what it was. That's what happened. Things happen. You know, we've all been there. I think that happened to me in a softball game when I was like right out of high school. Come to think of it, I got really sick while I was playing third base. Good memories. Anyway, Joey Ortiz could be pretty special, and seeing Eno Saris, national writer, talk about it, it really kind of crystallized for me. It's like, yeah, you know, I think I'm sleeping on him. You know, I think of him as a quality infielder, better than quality infielder, with a quality bat. You know, probably not better than that, but maybe it is better than that. What do you think about him?
I'm glad you brought it up, because Joey Ortiz is my quantum leap candidate.
Yes.
We talked about this, right?
We did a little bit.
Wanted to add him to my predictions because I have some regrettable ones in there already. So yep. I need to smooth that over. I'm all in on Joey Ortiz, Quantum Leap candidate 2025. He's got some really intriguing tools on offense and seems to be accessing them pretty well. And also the defense at shortstop is just going to be really good. It's just like, I don't understand fully why the Brewers were messing with a good thing anyway. And that ended up leading to Terang's shoulder being fatigued. He'll be fine for opening day. He said very, very adamantly. And not a ton of words either, but you knew.
But still, Bryce Terang, not one for many words. He's not a polysyllabic guy.
When we talked to him for the first time in a few days after he had gotten hurt. It was like checking in on an update. What you got, Bryce? Adam McAlvey from MLB.com asked him a question, and then Bryce gives a couple sentences. He goes, "I don't know. Not really going to tell you that much."
He is up front.
We're all on the same page.
He definitely doesn't. He's not trying to trick you or anything. He's going straight. Yeah. He's just like, I don't have a lot to say. I don't know what you want me to say. Or, you know, I feel for guys who like that. You know, it's not that he's even shy or anything. He just truly is not a guy who wants to spend his day talking. He's just not
Bryce Terang. Bryce Terang, if I could put it this way, Bryce Terang was put on Earth to play baseball.
Absolutely true.
And he is really good at it. So, like, it just works out perfectly. But Joey Ortiz, JR, he was probably put on Earth to play shortstop. And I think he's gonna be a really good one. And Brewers fans are gonna be remembering, you know, like mid-June, they'll be like, wow, we watched Willy Adames last year at short all season. When you see this kid, his hands are incredible. I think they're better than Terang's, frankly.
Amazing.
Yeah, so, and his arm's obviously better too. So yeah, all in on Joey Ortiz, why not?
I mean, this is how the Brewers win games. This is how they have what it looks to me like an 82 win team on paper and end up winning 88 to 91 games because they have great middle infield defense like that.
Your projection says, oh, Joey Ortiz will be 2 wins. And then suddenly Joey Ortiz is 4 wins.
Yeah.
And Jackson Chourio is plus 2 wins. And Bryce Terang is plus 2 wins. And it's like, oh, well, that's here you go.
Yeah,
no,
you're right.
Well, last year it was, I guess.
Plus, last year. That's correct. Plus 2 this year is a leap I'm not prepared to say for our guy Bryce Terang, who is still put on Earth to play baseball. But I think
105. That's like 105. Yeah, 105 WRC plus, and suddenly you're giving him down ballot MVP votes.
I mean, if he's a 105 WRC plus, I absolutely am giving him down ballot MVP votes. That would be unbelievable for the Brewers. You wrote about something else a little bit off the beaten path recently at jsonline.com about Shane Smith, White Sox pitcher. Now he's going to make the rotation for the Chicago White Sox. By the way, Rowdy's making Seattle's roster. He had a really good spring. Rowdy Tellez.
Wow, good spring.
I didn't
see that. I gotta say good job to my boy.
Yeah, he's
my old pal.
Anyway, yeah, you guys were tight. Shane Smith was the first pick in the Rule 5 draft. And, if you remember Miguel Diaz, I believe that was his name, a few years ago when the Padres snatched him up in the Rule 5 draft. A lot of panic. A lot of like, oh, did they just let a really high-level prospect go for free? And he ended up being really good to start with, and then it fell way off. Shane Smith in a land of opportunity with the Chicago White Sox is going to get a really good look, and he looks pretty strong. That's a guy that I'm surprised they didn't add to the 40-man in the offseason, but they ended up adding Chad Patrick instead, I think. I think that might have kind of been the guy that they chose for that spot. Probably could have still added Shane Smith. What do you think there? Is that going to be one that got away? How are you feeling?
Well, I mean, we'll see how he does like as a big league starter, which is what they're going to use him at. But I saw him pitch in person, and there's some really, really nasty stuff in there. I think I had him ranked in my 20s last season in, like, the very beginning of July, so basically June. So some things happened over the final 3 months. But he was intriguing for sure. When Biloxi moved into a starter's role, you started to see the starter's arsenal come back out. He was throwing a little harder. Granted, he was not sitting 98 like he is this spring. So I'm wondering what happened there, if the Brewers were aware that, like, knew that was going to happen, because that frankly, like, that does change some things for him, because his fastball isn't superb at 95, makes him more of a reliever, but he does have a deep arsenal. And it's, I don't know, it's easy in hindsight to say, oh, how'd you not protect this guy? But there were some guys on the 40-man, JR,
yeah,
that were not particularly awe-inspiring. And they did have room too. I guess they filled it up on that same day by the Rule 5 by acquiring Connor Thomas in the Rule 5, and then they signed Grant Wolfram as well. But like point blank, there are guys on the 40-man right now that are significantly less intriguing than Shane Smith would be, and he's
and
a starter
guys
too.
Drop. I mean, Tyler J was on this and isn't now, right?
He would be the Brewers' number 4 starter to start this season, even not as a Rule 5 guy.
Yes.
So from that perspective, yeah, that's a miss. That is a miss by the Brewers. They usually feel like they're on the other end of this. And the White Sox kind of got them. They kind of got them. The Brewers felt like they had a 40-man roster crunch, and we talk about this in the offseason, why those 40-man spots are important and stuff. Like, well, that's why they didn't call up Yoho. That's why they didn't call up Mizrowski. But then you didn't use the spot on Shane Smith. You used it on Tyler J.
I mean, he would be their fourth starter because DL Hall, Aaron Ashby, Tobias Myers, Jose Quintana, Brandon Woodruff are all not ready to start the season. So that's part of it. You know, they had starting pitching depth. Shane Smith would have been part of it, but down, you know, unless they do think he's a reliever, there might have been room for him as a reliever too, the way that, or at least on the 40-man, there would have been. I'm going to throw some trivia your way, Brewers trivia. You know I love my walk-offs,
Kyle Kendrick.
Kyle Kendrick was previous trivia question. That was a harder one. This one's a little easier. I don't think you'll get it. Not all of it, but some of it. The Brewers have had 3 walk-off wins on opening day. They will not have one this year because they're playing in the Bronx. And if there is a walk-off win, it will not be the Brewers at the plate, sadly to say. But they have 3 of them in their history. 2, I would say, in their pretty recent history.
Jonathan LaCroix.
That's correct. Against the Rockies right away. That was a sacrifice fly in 2013. So that was one.
Ricky Weeks.
Did he score the run? What you're thinking of, I'm pretty sure, is a home opener. It was a play at the plate.
Opening day, Ricky Weeks,
okay. In the home opener slid in safely a fielder's choice walk-off victory. I remember that vividly. He can hear Bob Uecker, may he rest in peace. I can hear his voice calling that play. Very, very much enjoyed. Now I'm going to look it up and find out that it was an extra innings and it wasn't Bob Uecker, but that's just what the memory has.
No, that was the 9th inning.
Yeah. So that wasn't opening day, but was it a fielder's choice? It was a play at the plate similar to that.
Yeah.
In 2021, the year after the COVID season against the Minnesota Twins, the Brewers had been down to their last out, and then Travis Shaw, who was back.
Oh, sure.
Hit a double to tie the game, but who was at the plate?
It was Orlando Arcia.
It certainly was. Very good. Well, well done. It certainly was. Now, the most famous walk-off on opening day, that's before you were born. It's the year 1980. It's against the Red Sox, and it's a grand slam to win the game. Can you name that ball player?
It was. Oh, we've done money. We've talked about this. I don't know.
Sixto Lescano. Yeah.
Sure. That's a good opening day.
It's a very good opening day. That was me trying to channel a little Bob Betts. Got a hoarse voice. It's not working for me. Can't get the voice right, Kurt. I'm better, but I still the voice isn't where
that's
I want
okay.
It to
be. I'm yawning right now. So
well, we need to wrap this up because we will probably be back, you know, for the opening day recap. Maybe ? Like Thursday will be the opening day. The weather does look good. Looks chilly, but looks all right in Yankee Stadium. Unlike last year, when the Brewers faced Jose Quintana after a one-day delay because of bad weather in New York against the Mets, and then they fought about it, Rhys Hoskins versus Jeff McNeil. We can only hope for the fireworks again this year. So maybe Friday we could maybe do a little bit of an opening day recap. I don't know. We don't have to.
Yeah, possibly. We'll see if the game calls for it.
Yeah. We'll definitely have something before the home opener.
Well, you know what we haven't gotten to yet that we absolutely need to talk about.
Tell me.
Oh, there are actually 2 things. We'll get to the second one later. Do you see the news out of Diamondbacks camp?
I actually don't know what you're talking about. Is it that Zach Gallen is the opening day starter over Corbin Burns?
It's that Corbin Burns is the number 5 starter.
What? I didn't see that at all. What is going on? What?
Because according to Torrey Lovello, actually some Diamondbacks.
It's Torrey Lovello time.
some Diamondbacks people were like, no, this is legit what happened. So Torrey Lovello, according to him, said that he wasn't sure up until the end of like a week before opening day who his opening day starter would be. And then they named it would be Zach Gallen. It's like, sure, it was always going to be Zach Gallen. Your guys are trying to bring him back. Although I guess maybe the money for Corbin Burnes would make sense too. And so Corbin Burnes, then you just assume, oh yeah, you can just pitch the next game, right? That's fine. It's an extra day of rest, but it's okay. You're good with it, right? You're a professional pitcher. We can line you up. No. Corbin Burnes cannot make that start. He cannot pitch with 2 extra days of rest from, because his last spring training outing was Friday. So then he would be pitching on Saturday. He would be pitching on Friday or Saturday again. And 7 days rest is too much for his routine. He can accommodate. He said he can accommodate a day here, a day there, on either side of 5 days, but 7 days mixes the whole thing up. And
so they have to put him at number five because he's being weird about his routine.
This reminiscent of perhaps the 2021 playoffs.
Oh, just a little reminiscent, I would say. Far fewer stakes, far smaller stakes, but
yeah, ultimately doesn't really matter. But like, it's just funny. You paid a guy $200 million and he's your number five starter. I can imagine some of the looks in the room when he said that were like, you can't what?
He's a particular guy. He always was. And quite honestly, if you shove like he does over and over and over again, he can be particular. Like, it's not hurting anybody. It's just how he operates.
There are a good number of baseball players whose uniqueness between the ears, their mindset, is a driving factor in their greatness. Or at least, like, so they tell themselves. Josh Hader's a guy that comes to mind.
I was totally going to say that name, of course.
In that regard, too. I think Devin Williams, but that's in a different way. That's in a give me the effing ball.
Yeah, he has what the closer's mentality TM, you know, the thing that everybody refers to when they talk about the closer's mentality. Sure, that's who he is.
I just thought that was interesting and we should talk about it. Bring it up a little
funny. I did not see that. That's amazing. I feel like I maybe wrote that he was going to be the number two starter because I just assumed he would be.
Everyone assumed he would be. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have to check that. You said there was a second thing, though, that we hadn't touched on.
Speaking of Diamondbacks, JR.
Oh, no. Kurt, you had a little culinary adventure.
A culinary adventure. So it was. I had rattlesnake. I did it. Finally,
you ate
after months of buildup, I had rattlesnake for one of my final meals in Arizona.
I like to think that I'm not an adventurous eater, not even a little bit, but I am open-minded and I will try things. I saw the picture that you posted of this rattlesnake that you ate, and that impulse in my brain that says open-minded, try things, it shut right down. It just closed. It was a slamming door. It's like, you know what? You don't have to try everything. You don't have to. It's not important to try everything.
Check my blue sky for it. That's where I posted it. And I'll put it up to the screen right now. The part that looks alarming is, I'm presuming this
the
is
tentacles,
like
the arms.
Skeleton tentacles of the rattlesnake. And these are like the vertebrae or something.
Why do we need
horizontal pieces? It's gotta be for the ambiance and also to like make you feel like you're doing something unique, because frankly the rattlesnake is like, it didn't do anything for me either way. It tasted sort of like chicken. Everyone always says, oh, it tastes like chicken. It kind of did taste like chicken, but like it didn't really have a flavor. I tried to, it was breaded, so I on a few of the pieces I tried stripping the breading away, and I'm just going to try to eat it. And then the texture was kind of, it was really chewy, so I didn't love that. I said, like, I would really love this to be, I don't know, you could like just maybe dip a little oil in it, and then you could season it a little bit, and then like put it on the grill. That's how I want to eat this. Not necessarily breaded, but it was fine. I enjoyed it. There was a little sauce there to go with it. So I have had rattlesnake. There was no price listed. It said market price, which like there's no market for this. AK, we're just going to charge you whatever we want.
That's
the
right.
The bill came and I was like, huh.
You know, okay. Sometimes trying things cost money.
Yeah, it absolutely going to cost you money. And Pat Murphy, by the way, spot on with his general food recs about this restaurant that it was at. It's only at one place in Arizona that I could find. Like, maybe illegally they have it some other places. I got to get on the Black Phoenix Dining Market to find that out. But he was like, oh, yeah, the food there, meh.
It's meh.
And the rest of the food there was very meh.
Is Pat Murphy also like me in his food recommendations, the way that he's like me in his fashion, in that he has like a couple places and he just keeps going back to that?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. I think.
Why haven't I hung out with Pat Murphy? I feel we are meant to be friends, Kurt.
Yeah.
Kind of.
He did. One day we did walk into his office this spring, and he was just like discussing kind of with himself, but then we all were roped into it by default of walking in the room. His final meal choices, if he was on
death row. That's dark.
But, and we're like, Murph, this could just be your last meal. And he was like, no, this, like, I thought about like what it would be. You guys don't think about that? And I'm like, no.
Oh, I do, actually.
You do? Yeah, okay. So I guess this is a normal.
Ever since I read the book, thing. The Chamber by John Grisham. I read that as a younger child, about a death row inmate. The Gene Hackman plays him in the movie, RIP Gene Hackman. And it's very particular. It involves an Eskimo pie, how particular he is about his final meal. Ever since I've read that book, I've thought about it a lot. And the problem I have with it is that outside of like just a good old fashioned ribs and chicken, I don't have a better answer than that. And that is how I know that I'm a deeply boring person, because I would go ribs and chicken with my last meal.
I mean,
maybe shrimp.
Look, Pat Murphy said a Burger King cheeseburger. And we're like,
oh my God, he's more boring than I am.
I haven't had one in 30 years. And then this spawned a whole conversation of, when was the last time you went to Burger King? And the answer was like, I don't know, college maybe.
Oh, I've been recently. Not super recently. Okay. My kids like it.
Yeah. I couldn't tell you what they got besides like the Whopper. So
yeah. I can't tell you the last time I've eaten there, but I'm sure I went on a Burger King kick at some point in my post college life. I don't really eat a lot of fast food despite being shaped like a bowling ball. I don't actually eat a lot of fast food, so I'm not really a connoisseur. I couldn't tell you the difference between a Wendy's burger and a Burger King burger, and I haven't eaten at McDonald's in like decades, so I don't even know what that tastes like anymore. It's
tough. But a Culver's burger, you know that.
I do, but I hate Culver's. I mean, I can't say that on a podcast or anything, but like Culver's does nothing for me. It's just way overboard grease. Like, oh, sorry, Jay Kokorowski. I love the brand. I support the brand. I just don't want to eat that food. It's nasty. And, well, no, they still have Pepsi there, right? I think they still have Pepsi, or do they go Coke?
I believe it's Pepsi. I think don't quote me on that. I don't order drinks when I go to fast food.
Right. I'm pretty sure there's still
Pepsi. That's why I tell myself that I'm not being super unhealthy.
This is where I get my bowling ball figure.
Do you know how hard it is to go 3 weeks in Arizona and like
eat well?
I think it'd
be very difficult. Well, I just spent a week at my parents' house and they have like actual food preparation and I still ate terribly. It's a horrible
thing. The one thing is like you go and you get your groceries is your apartment is not just filled with like junk food. So I don't have that at the ready.
Sure.
Which is probably actually good.
How much fridge space do you have? Like, do you just load up on day one and hope to ride
it was out a full, for 2 weeks? It was a full fridge. I went grocery shopping twice.
Okay.
Enough things for like a lunch here or a dinner there. I don't want to go out for every meal.
Those frozen bags of vegetables. I feel like we've had a little bit of a vegetable revolution where you can just like get a bag, throw it in for 5.5 minutes and it tastes amazing. It's like comes out steaming and perfect. I think we perfected that somewhere along the way. Like how we perfected vending machines taking crumpled dollar bills. We solved vegetables. Vegetables don't require work anymore. We don't have to work hard.
Don't tell that to my wife. We've got like a whole garden set up.
I mean,
if you need tomatoes, you need veggies. It ain't me. Look, it ain't me. She loves doing it, so she can do it. Like I love purple Doritos, so I'm gonna do purple Doritos. And she loves veggies in the yard.
I mean, my wife has a little mini garden too, and we'll get like 6 cherry tomatoes a year. It's wonderful for a second or two. I mean, you know what, to everybody, gardening is its own thing. That's a nice hobby. I have nothing bad to say about it. I'm getting the vegetables that come in a bag that can be done in 5.5 minutes. That's my jam.
Look,
thank you.
Look, look, my hobby is watching Wisconsin basketball, and you want to talk about,
dress
you
want to
talk about a satisfying hobby?
Yeah. Kurt's hobby is done for the year 2025, or at least this part of 2025. Another one starts up soon, though. Thursday, the Brewers will be at Yankee Stadium. Milwaukee Brewers baseball back at you. The first of 162 games. They will be home on Monday against the Royals. 1 o'clock first pitch in that game. 1 o'clock for both of them. 1 o'clock for the game against in New York. First game of the day, I believe, by a couple minutes. Gets the post-Tokyo series season started. And then Monday they'll be back against the Royals playing in 3 games over the weekend. Kurt, any last thoughts? Any last thoughts before I send you away?
The broadcast on Thursday, definitely going to be worth your time. Joe Buck,
we got to pay attention.
Doing it on ESPN. I don't believe the Brewers have a local. Well, they obviously don't because Bill Schroeder, The Rock. Rock is working with Joe Buck. That's going to be awesome. I can't wait.
And at the same time, our first game without Bob Uecker on the radio, you know, there's going to be people listening because for obvious reasons, but also, you know, middle of the day, you're going to get people on listen to the radio. That'll be really, really interesting. So we'll have to tune into both somehow. Hear Rock with Joe Buck, I think is pretty cool. Might be their only ESPN game all year. They are not on the schedule for any other ESPN action this season. So right out of the gate and then maybe never again. We will see. I'll be curious to see Devin Williams in that pinstripe. That's going to be really interesting. All right, Kurt, we did it. We made it. We have survived yet another winter. The unofficial start is Thursday. We'll be back at you possibly on Friday, and if not, certainly by Monday to talk about the home opener. Thank you, Kurt. This has been Micro Brew. We'll catch you again next week. See you, buddy.
See ya.